Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Hello and welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we're joined by Rupert Verco, CEO of Cobra Resources, to discuss their latest milestone at the Boland project in South Australia. The company recently completed a second bench scale ISR study, achieving exceptional permeability results that suggest even higher recoveries at lower costs. Alongside this, Cobra has raised £1.7 million to advance resource definition, scaled ISR testing and regional exploration. Rupert will share insights on these developments and what they mean for the project's commercialization and potential as a world-class ionic rare earth discovery. So welcome back to the podcast, Rupert.
Thanks, Phil. Thanks, Kevin. Good to be speaking to you again.
Absolutely. So, I mean, it's interesting looking at these this second bench scale study. Can you just explain, Rupert, the significance of the exceptional permeability results from the second bench scale ISR study and how they compare to the first?
Yeah, sure, Phil. Look, I think in context of mining, sometimes there's a lot of different triggers, both geologically and physically, that can limit operations and limit their capacity to get their ore out of the ground or the minerals that they want to extract. And for in situ recovery, permeability of your ore body is key. And what this testing has shown is we have exceptional permeability. And that permeability means that we can extract ore very quickly and probably increase our recoveries of our existing or our first bench scale study owing to the increased permeability. So for context, the first bench scale study took 150 days. And owing to the permeability in the second sample, it's been finished in 24 hours. And we expect that to drop the acid consumption and hopefully yield higher recoveries. So it's very exciting. And we'll have those recovery results in the next week or two. So plenty of short-term news on the horizon.
Yeah. I mean, it's a significant increase, isn't it, in terms of the test, obviously 24 hours compared to 150 days. So let's just get this sort of break this down. So you crush the rock sample and you use this liquid. It's like almost like a cleaning solution to wash out these rare earth metals. And obviously you got the results 24 hours. So the rock in this test presumably was easier for the liquid to flow through it. No.
Yeah, you're right. I think the first thing is it's not rock. We are an ionic sand that hosts ionic mineralization within organics. So it's not your typical impermeable clay, which most saprolite-hosted atypical ionic projects are. So that sand gives us our permeability. And so what this testing has done, and probably the biggest driver of the difference is, and I must follow up, we're using ANSTO, who are probably the leaders in both rare earth extraction and also ISR trial testing. But combining the two together is fairly unique, Phil, and it hasn't really been done before. So we're treading in some new waters, and we probably compromised the initial tests through the sample preparation. We brought in some saprolite, which is impermeable, and we homogenized that through that first test. And that probably flawed the results a little. So this second test was really to validate and confirm the permeabilities or see if we got higher permeabilities from a cleaner ore sample. And these results have certainly shown that. So I think the key point is that first test gave us great economics. We had low acid consumption, high recoveries from a high-grade sample, and this second test really speeds up the process and only improves those economics.
So, Rupert, why did you put the saprolite in the first place? Was there a logical reason why you put it in there when you did the first test?
Yeah, great question, Kevin. And look, getting very technical here, but there is another approach to doing bench scale ISR tests, and that's where you use a vertical column and you don't homogenize the sample, you keep it whole, and you use the natural geology to direct your lixiviant through. But that is not the ANSTO process. Their process is different, but that other process is used elsewhere. So we were sort of prepared for that method, and we left some saprolite in the sample to be able to enable that process if it was going to be required. And look, we're learning as we go, Kevin. I think when you're doing something for the first time, like we are with in situ recovery of paleo or sand-hosted ionic rare earths, there's going to be a little bit of trial and error. But I think the positive is, Kevin, is the biggest truth teller is going to be in the next 6 months for us when we can take this to the field and do an in-field tracer study.
So at the minute, this is being tested in a lab effectively on a small sample.
Yeah, correct. Correct.
Yeah.
So we're
And
using.
you have mixed it with some stuff, gone through the process, got pretty exceptional results even from that situation, to be honest, but it took a lot longer, obviously. And now
Sure.
you've sped that up by 150 times, basically, if it's gone from 150
Absolutely.
days to 24 hours is pretty sensational, because 150 days would have been expensive to say the least, but at the same time, once you started the process, then 150 days you were just then on a treadmill of it coming out.
Absolutely.
But now 24 days it's gone. But coming back to this raise, and you've managed to raise 1.7 million in the crappiest market I've ever seen in my entire life. Congratulations, especially as it's only a slight discount. The scenario obviously is that the geologist guys who know all about this project, we've interviewed them as well with yourself, have put a huge chunk of money in and increased their amount. So they obviously have a lot of confidence in this. Otherwise, they wouldn't be sticking their life savings in this, I'm assuming.
Yeah, look, we're very fortunate to have the support of our major shareholders. They've been very successful in the past, and they see a significant opportunity here. And look, I think that their investment shows their confidence in what we're defining. And look, I think, yeah, you're right. It's a tough market, and it's always challenging to determine when to pull the trigger on a raise. And I think what we're very excited about is, well, one, our major shareholders have shown their intent to keep providing support to the company. But what we've been able to do, Kevin, is we've done it at a time where we're about to deliver some pretty exceptional news to the market, producing our first mixed rare earth carbonate, this second bench scale test work. I'm pretty excited about what's coming. And now that we are very well funded to execute on a pretty significant resource drill out, hopefully we can see some great share price appreciation coming to the company in the coming months.
Yeah,
I was just
let's hope so.
looking at the sort of, the roadmap, let's say, Rupert, for obviously some of the proceeds from that funding. So there's quite a lot of things that are to break down. You've got the affecting air core and sonic core drilling to support the maiden paleo channel. You've got the expanded air core drilling to test the priority paleo channel targets. You've got, as you mentioned, the scaled ISR testing for the MREC. You've got the infield permeability testing as well, so replicate the bench scale, but in the field, you've got the scoping study. So there's plenty of work ahead, right?
Heaps of work ahead, Phil. So look, we have results pending on our maiden mixed rare earth carbonate that will come to market in the coming weeks. We have those results for that second bench scale. We're going to be up in the field from the 11th of December doing stakeholder engagement. And look, I'd like to think that we're going to be able to get a rig in the field before Christmas. So look, when with that kind of time frame and leading into next year, we've got plenty of catalysts to be able to bring to the market, and it's at a pretty good and exciting point in the journey of any company. I think the one thing that is probably a little bit confusing for some investors is that what our strategy has been this year in us focusing purely on metallurgy and permeability. And look, really, when we look at this, Phil, and we've got to treat our shareholders' money like it's our own, we want to address where the biggest risk of this project is up front. And we really feel like the work that we've done with ANSTO over the last 6 months has really demonstrated what we wanted to achieve. Like, if you asked me 12 months ago, what do you want to see? I'd say, I want to see 50% recoveries. I want to see it at low acid consumption, and I want to see impurity ratios of, I would have probably said 5 to 1, and we're up over 10 to 1. So all these things that we've hit what we would have set as KPIs, and that gives us huge confidence. And I think that's why we've gone to the market and we've raised a significant amount of cash to be able to get us a long way through our work program going forwards.
Yeah, I think you've done it a sort of almost a different way than other explorers. Is you've rather than proving up your resource, you've effectively looked at the processing methods and how to maximize and get the production right, and then looking at the scoping and then the resource. Whereas ever all your junior explorers would normally prove up and then do a design, a mine design, and the planning and the processing facility based on that those results.
Yeah, look, there's the challenge with rare earths is they a lot of projects come unstuck in the metallurgy, and it's very hard to engineer solutions for the commodities like rare earths and other critical minerals projects that have very volatile markets. So we've taken the approach that if we can demonstrate a very low-cost pathway to producing a flow sheet, we're confident we're going to be able to define a resource of significance. So let's address that challenge first, and that really de-risks what we're doing going forwards. So I think we've hit a pretty important crossroad in our journey, and now it's full steam ahead.
Yeah, Ishtar Resources did the same thing in Kazakhstan. They tested it and then realized it wasn't going to work and then dropped the project with Alex. So I think it was the wise way to do it, to be honest. It's like you now know it's a work, it's a goer, and now the money's come in. One of the questions on my mind is, what is the area that this could be done over? And how much of that do you already own? And is the potential to expand that so that you can have a bigger area and a longer mine life, as you go ahead and do this in the ground?
Yeah, absolutely, Kevin. Look, if you look at what we've done, and we've utilized all the data that we've had at hand, a lot of historic drilling's been done focused on uranium, and what we've been able to define in that is a significant mineralization footprint. We've modeled 139 square kilometers of this mineralization over just Bolan alone. And look, we've been aggressive in picking up ground over the last 12 months. We've expanded this position to over a prospective 2,000 square kilometers of this paleochannel geology, and we'll work to try and get more. We want to be the biggest and the best and the only player doing this, and we're in the right jurisdiction to do it. So let's get our hands on the ground while we can.
And how big do you think it could be? You said 2,000 square kilometers. How big is 2,000 square kilometers if you made it a country?
Oh, look, it's the size of a lot of European countries, or bigger than. I think it's probably about the same size as Georgia. But look, it takes about 4.5, 5 hours of driving going 110 kilometres an hour to go from one end to the other. So it's a
Holy
big
moly. So we're
task on
talking
our
about a
hands.
big area.
We are. But look, I think the important bit is that area, the process of mining that we're looking at, Kevin, and the area that it's broadacre farmland. It's not the kind of country that isn't amenable to this. Like, we think we can integrate this into the cropping rotations, particularly if we're getting these quick and fast permeabilities. So
Yes.
our impact on stakeholders and environmental, we expect to be very low, and we really look forward to showing that in the scoping study.
Kev, it's the size of Luxembourg or Samoa, apparent according to the internet, which is pretty
Okay,
big.
and that's only where you've gone now. It could be bigger than that, obviously.
Exactly.
So if you get more land, and I presume the land, when you're saying it, you're not actually buying the land, you're just buying the mineral rights on the land.
Yeah, so exploration licenses give you the rights to explore for the minerals, and then you obviously need to go through the approvals process to convert them to mining leases. Look, to put it in context, though, of what how big do you need and what do you need, we're pretty confident that what we have at Boland is going to be sufficient to give us a mine life that exceeds a decade. So that's going to be enough to provide pretty robust economics when we get to defining that resource and working through a scoping study.
And part of this is part of this drilling that you're going to do on Boland. Is this going to be to assess, are there sort of high strike points in terms of the mineralization within this area? So, or do you think it's fairly constant within the area, or you don't know at this moment?
Yeah, look, we have some confidence in consistency. You're always going to find your higher grade pockets. And what's important with this style of mineralization is what drives high grade is not just the enrichment of the rare earths, it's also the chemical conditions of the groundwater and the material that's in it. So we'll get some variability, but there'll certainly be high pockets. Look, you look at the sample that we tested, and it was 4,500 ppm or under 0.5%, and for an ionic clay, that's exceptionally high. So hopefully we certainly define more of that, because I'd love to be able to define a significant resource at over 2,000 ppm, Kevin. That'd make me very happy.
Okay, well, I'm glad the geologist is going to be happy, but I've got two more questions for you. The
Sure.
first question would be, how, if at all, has the Chinese affected by basically them limiting some of these metals and I'm not sure rare earths involved, but like tungsten and what else was it that was put
Gallium, there's
gallium.
antimony.
How does this affect the market for rare earths? Do you think the Chinese are going to try and shut the door on the rest of the world for these rare earths?
I'd hate to claim to being a well-renowned geopolitician, mate, but look, I think you can speculate that these minerals and commodities are getting more and more strategically important for countries' sovereignties. And they're going to play a pivotal role in advanced and Western countries trying to achieve decarbonisation targets and trying to be more efficient in our energy usage. And I think the great thing about rare earths is they're important in nuclear reactors, they're important in electric vehicles, and then they're still applicable in things like your electric drill and drones and anything that has a propeller. In very modern appliances, requires a certain amount of rare earths. I think it's going to be an interesting dynamic with China. They do control so much of the supply chain that it's going to take a long time for us to be able to develop alternate supply chains. And I think the great thing for us is if we can continue to hit our milestones as we develop this project, we can be cost competitive with China, and therefore, look, I want to be able to deliver the best price we can. And if that's from China, I hope I don't put our governments off by saying that, but I think in reality, we want to make sure that we're getting the best price for our product, and you need to look at all markets.
Yeah. Okay. So that's then my second question, which is we have critical minerals funding from the US. We have critical minerals funding from Europe. I presume there's something similar in Australia to protect the assets that you have in country. Is there the practicality of getting grants to help you move this from, say, pre-feasibility study to feasibility study and then to start producing? Because I presume the capex on this isn't going to be huge because
Correct.
you're not digging a mine effectively, are you? You are, on the ground squirting some water. I mean, I know that's very simplistic, but ultimately that's what you do.
Yeah, you're right. Look, good questions. And yes, there is certainly been funding deployed in Australia for critical minerals projects. There's great tax incentives for producing critical mineral mines to help really improve that cash flow up front. I think what is a delicate balance, though, is securing the offtakes to be able to finance an operation. And whilst soft financing or loans, soft loans from governments is great because that's an endorsement on your project, you need to come up with the right mixture of future commercial selling points and financing. So, look, that's all stuff that we'll have ahead of us, Kevin. And look, I'm really looking forward to working through that. We're already speaking to off-takers. There's a lot of interest from Europe and Asia and also the States. So we need to assess it all as it comes. And I think the great thing for us is if we can be that really low-cost producer of heavy rare earths, we're going to have a very important strategic source of them. So look, let's be Switzerland at the moment and wait until we work out where the best deal
Be
comes from,
Switzerland.
mate.
You're not going to be Donald Trump and stick 25%, 50% tariffs on all these things, which I'm absolutely certain he's going to do. So your low cost production could all of a sudden get a benefit because you're not going to get the tariffs applied to you because you're Australian. So I think you've got quite an advantage there, but maybe it's too early to talk about that right now. But yeah, let's see how it
Yeah,
all
look,
pans out.
it's gonna be a really interesting few years, that's for sure, Kevin. I think we're gonna get the popcorn out and watch the politics play out for sure.
Yeah, but in the meantime, you're focusing on being very competitive in the world market for this stuff, and therefore profitable from the point of view. I mean, I think you did say it wasn't going to cost more than a few dollars to get it out, and maybe it sells at several factors more than that. So I don't know.
Yeah.
We can talk
Look,
about the numbers at this stage. So.
we haven't gone through a scoping study, but we're certainly aiming, and as we're working through acid consumption and purity removal, we're growing in confidence that we can be competitive in that bottom quartile of producers from a cost standpoint. And look, that bottom quartile basically sits at around $10 US a kilo, MREC produced, or less. And I think we'll be able to sit within that based on what we're seeing. Look, obviously we've got a lot of work to do to prove that up, but the initial signs on what we're delivering through this MET testing is very positive for that, Kevin.
Very good. I'm sure we'll talk more about the numbers as they come in, and I'll probably be able to
Yeah.
put more meat on those bones once you get these results back and start to do some
Yeah.
stuff going forward next year. So yeah, we look forward to continuing with the story, and yeah, again, congratulations on the raise. I think puts you in a very good position, and as you said, you got some great news coming based on the results. So let's see how that all pans out.
No worries, mate. All right.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, guys.
Rupert Vercoe, thanks very much for appearing on the podcast.
Good on you guys. Thanks for your time.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.